This podcast is brought to you by Dinatropin. Dinatropin is a natural human growth hormone secretagogue that up until recently was only available for clinical use. Now, I know that there's a lot of bunk human growth hormone supplements on the market. There's a lot of bunk supplements out there in general, but this is the real deal. It's been demonstrated in over 1,000 clinical cases to raise human growth hormone levels, natural human growth hormone levels, by 50 to 200%. It was developed by Dr. Mark Gordon for patients whom he did not want to use recombinant human growth hormone on, you know, the injectable growth hormone that can have a whole series of negative health consequences associated with its use. He wanted to use this because it was a safer product and a more inexpensive product. And people from across the country have gotten positive results in raising their natural human growth hormone levels with this awesome liposomal technology. So if you're interested in checking this out and optimizing your own natural growth hormone levels, come on over to warriorsoulagoge.com. That's www.warriorsoulagoge.com. Look under supplements and you will find Dinatropin. This podcast is also brought to you by Ketogenics. Ketogenics is the best exogenous ketone supplement on the market. We're hearing a lot about exogenous ketones these days. We've got Navy SEALs using them. We've got NASA astronauts using them to help them to fuel themselves through their space missions. And exogenous ketones are probably the most exciting area of supplementation on the market. But Ketogenics rises above the rest of the products that are now coming out because it's got stuff in it that's going to help you to utilize the ketones more effectively. It's got alpha GPC, which is going to help you to utilize the ketones for brain energy more effectively. I almost said brain injury. It's got green tea extract in it, and that helps to take the jittery effect of caffeine away, but also helps you to extend the benefits of caffeine and to get more energy out of it. And of course, it's got beta hydroxybutyrate in it. Beta hydroxybutyrate is one of the ketones that your body produces naturally, and this can help you to instantly get into a state of ketosis and can train your body to utilize its fat stores for fuel more efficiently. I use this product often, and in my mind, there is no other product on the market that can make you feel this way and that can do what Ketogenics can do for you. So if you want to try out Ketogenics, head over to www.realketones.com/#warriorsoul and see what the power of ketones can do for you. Over the past decade, we've sent hundreds of thousands of young men and women off to fight two wars, one in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. And in this time, the media has chronicled their time in combat. It's chronicled their victories. It's chronicled some of their lapses. And it's chronicled their return home. And in this time period, these wars are not by any means over, though some people say they are. But in this time period where we've seen a lapse in combat operations, the media has been chronicling their return and examining this group of veterans. And what we see in the media's analysis of veterans in general, in many cases, is a group that has been victimized by war, a group that's suffering from post-traumatic stress, a group that's suffering from depression, a group that's suffering from the symptoms of traumatic brain injury. But in so many cases, all we see are the defeats, the veteran being victimized by his circumstances. And what we rarely see, or what we rarely hear about, is the veteran rising above his circumstances and shunning the title of victim. I think that in today's culture, it's become very popular to become a victim. It's become very popular to take on some sort of title that puts you in an oppressed class. And when we think about veterans in this light, I think it does them an immense disservice. And the real damage here is done to those young men and women who we don't hear about, who may not have the best of circumstances right now, but who need some sort of glimmer of hope. This episode is the first in a series of episodes we're going to be doing here at the Warrior Soul Podcast called Tales from the Blast Factory. And it's titled as such because this is the title of a book that's been written by my co-host, Andrew Marr, that's due out probably around early fall 2017. And that book chronicles his story. Is a Special Forces Green Beret who operated in Afghanistan over three different tours and who came home with traumatic brain injury. And the reason why I think that Andrew's story is so important is because it highlights a number of different issues. Number one, Andrew had traumatic brain injury, but was never directly hit by an IED or an explosive device or by small arms fire. He came home from Afghanistan without a scratch, and yet he suffered from traumatic brain injury. And this is important because what science is finding is that those of us who've been exposed to low-level explosions, Andrew served as a breacher. Basically, for those of you who never served, he was one of the guys who helped to blow doors off buildings before the rest of the team came in. He indirectly bore the brunt of a lot of low-level explosions over years. And this caused chronic inflammation in his brain, which gave him traumatic brain injury. And from that, what we can garner is that there's probably a lot more young men and women who suffer from similar injuries than we actually hear about. The next thing is that we hear about Andrew's experience and what types of symptoms that came about because of this type of injury. And these symptoms looked a lot like post-traumatic stress, suffering from emotional outbursts, becoming very angry, violent at times, and not knowing why, right? And then the third thing I want you to understand is that Andrew rose above his circumstances, and he searched for a way to fix his problems and his issues. And today, he's returned to his elite performing status and is a member of our team here at Warrior Soul. And there's a lot more stories out there about veterans who were able to rise above their circumstances, who didn't take as truth that they've just been given a bad hand, or didn't take as truth that they would be physically or mentally impaired for the rest of their lives, as many medical professionals had told them. Andrew actually went out there and he did something about it. And now he wants to bring this information to our community to help each and every young man or woman who suffers from similar injuries. So as you listen to this episode, I really want you to put yourself in his shoes. In this first installment, we're going to get into Andrew's time as a special forces operator, his time serving in Afghanistan, what it was like to be on that team and to be dealing with that kind of op tempo. And then I want you to think about all the passion and the emotion he put into his job, and the fact that one day somebody told him that he couldn't do that job anymore. And then I want you to think about that aftermath. We're going to get into all the way up to where Andrew is just beginning to feel the symptoms of his injuries. And then in the next installment, we'll talk to you a bit more about how he solved them. So with that, after a couple of quick short announcements, we'll get into episode number 44 of the Warrior Soul Podcast. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's a solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. Dude, you've got your book coming out very soon. And I just wanted people to be aware of what's going on with it. It's called Tales from the Blast Factory. Can you go into a little bit about what it's about? What's, you know, I know it talks a little bit about your story, but you can give people an idea of what's going to be in it and what kind of impact you think it's going to have.
Yeah. It kind of chronicles a little bit of my life as a Special Forces Green Beret and what that looked like, what that op tempo looked like, and a little bit of a peek behind the curtain to kind of give the reader an understanding of what that lifestyle is like when you're living by the honor code and the brotherhood. That kind of that fraternity and what that looks like. And then it kind of speaking from going from an environment or a lifestyle that is, based in certainty, and then going into the field of the unknown and uncertain as far as, the future, and what that looked like for my life. And specifically, you know, I was, had a number of traumatic brain injuries that, led to a medical retirement and a lot of physical, you know, emotional, psychological, cognitive, issues resulted from that. And when it was going on, Chris, there wasn't a whole lot of information out. There wasn't a Warrior Angels Foundation. There wasn't a Warrior Soul podcast that put out the leading information, you know, on these subjects to where we could have a good understanding of what actually was going on, what causes these types of symptoms in somebody, and where does that originate from. So when I first started having problems due to a TBI, it was months after my returning from my last deployment, and started to have new problems that were never apparent before. And when I raised my hand to ask for help, and you only raise your hand when there's no other place or no other, you can't go anywhere else. And problems were happening in my life. My family was being affected in a way that I knew that what was going on wasn't sustainable. So I said, okay, I need help. I'm on fire. I don't know what's going on. I can't perform. I can't think. I can't remember. I'm having issues with balance and double vision, blurry vision, migraine headaches, just a whole you know, wide range of new issues that had never been there before. And the basic model, you know, was to manage symptoms with medication and then try to work it out through, you know, talk therapy. And at the end of the day, you know, I said many times before, I woke up to find myself on 13 medications, you know, seeing a number of different specialists and doctors through the military medical model. Nobody was communicating with one another. Nobody was looking at this as how does this affect the individual on a whole? You know, what is the underlying condition? People are just looking, medical professionals were just looking at things from their perspective, you know, piece of the pie, which was very minute when you're looking at, you know, a whole, you know, and we are dynamic, you know, beings, and you have to look at it on that whole level. And it was a process of saying, okay, well, you know, what's being given to me is not working. It's making my life worse. And then confronting the fact that what I thought was my purpose in life, which was leading men into combat, confronting evil, face to face and eliminating it. You know, I thought that was living out my life's purpose. And so when that was taken away, when, you know, the medical system said, okay, you're going to have a medical retirement. You can't afford to have one more blow to the head. You know, on top of all the other problems I was having, now I had a major identity crisis going from, again, like that known, that what was certain to the unknown to the uncertain, and started to go down that slippery slope where you get kind of caught up in my life is never going to be the same. Everything that I knew is now different. Everything that gave my life a purpose and a meaning and a significance isn't there anymore. And so my physical health was, you know, was derailing. My mental health was derailing, taking away what I thought was my purpose and my significance. I was left with just mindset that my life now lacks significance. It lacked meaning. My thoughts and my actions for the first time were not in alignment, and I couldn't figure out why. It wasn't that I was consciously wanting to perform certain actions, but they continued to be performed, and oftentimes as a direct detriment to myself and to my family. And so it kind of talks about going through that uncertain process that I think readers will identify with, anybody who's transitioned from one way of life into another, especially the military, going from what was known in the military, transitioning to being a civilian. But it's like, it's that on steroids, because we weren't given that benefit of going through a 2 or 3 year transition. It was like in the emergency room fighting for life. My children are also going through life threatening illnesses at the same time, going through a medical retirement in the middle of that. And then 6 months later, finding myself, you know, as a civilian, and my head was still spinning. And so it wasn't time to map out, you know, what's the best scenario, what's ideal here for our next, you know, evolution of life. And so it kind of talks through that process. And then we started looking for new answers or alternative answers to what was being given to us. And again, that's psychotherapy and medication, which again had me, if I started off in a bad place needing that, you know what I mean? That took me 2 or 3 orders of magnitude to a worse position. And so the book talks about how we explored with different alternative, you know, means of therapy, how we came across Dr. Mark Gordon and his protocols, what that did for me in my life, how we were able to start up a nonprofit foundation to bring that same level of healing to other people who are in the same predicament. But, you know, it talks about kind of the hardware issues that were faced through traumatic brain injury, and then this kind of the software issues that we faced, which was really confronting failed belief systems and understanding how to elevate your internal state regardless of what's going on outside of you. And so to be internally greater than your external circumstances and to the external situations of life. And it goes through the book goes through a step-by-step process of how I identified these things, how I kind of confronted these monsters and was able to, you know, carve a path out that brought this reemergence of a life worth living again. You know what I mean? One that was at the foundational level was built on purpose and meaning and significance and how to find that again. One, when you thought it was all taken away, and it was a process of going back and really going inward and understanding that, I just got some feedback here. It's throwing off my, thought. Where was I at, Chris?
You were talking about understanding, and then I just put it on mute. So I think,
You know, so it was the process of looking at and how to find meaning and how to find purpose again. And my dad gave me some excellent advice when I was just about at rock bottom, and I was talking to him on the phone, and he said basically this. He said, "Son, I can't understand everything that you've been through. I know that you're hurting, but if you could just find a way to make your life about helping somebody else, about putting value into somebody else, I think you'll find that'll put value into you that will repurpose and purpose your life again, just like it always has been." And I found that at the most basic level, you know, that's what it's about, getting outside of yourself, because you can, when you live by the hormones of stress, you get kind of locked into this, what about me in my immediate environment and this immediate line of time? And that's all you're worried about. Me, my immediate environment, and the immediate timeline that I forecast in front of me. And that's really very selfish behavior when you're wrapped up in it. But when you're wrapped up in it, or you're wrapped up in these cycles of life, it's kind of hard to get a different perspective on it. But I was able to do that. And, you know, I think the process is being able to learn from our mistakes and then to make a better decision, you know, next time. And that's the process of the evolution of growth. So it's to learn, it's to grow, it's to serve, and it's to love. And the book, you know, chronicles that, that period of my life and how I came to these conclusions. And at the end, we wrap it up with, lessons learned, biology lessons learned dealing with the TBI, and then kind of these more, life lessons learned, and then give practical applications for each one. So I think the reader, whether military or not, will really identify it. Some new things that maybe not are known on a wide scale as far as regarding to TBI and PTS, I think there'll be information in there that will be really illuminating to people who are traveling similar terrain. But, you know, in a nutshell, that's what the readers can expect to get from the book.
Just when I'm speaking over here, I'm just going to keep your side on mute, and then we'll switch back and forth, brother. It's cool. You know, I want to unpack a few items there. You know, there's a lot going on there. You know, we have this idea of that transition. You know, when you're in the military, everything is clear cut. You know, you have a job, you have your training, you have your family at home, and you have a purpose. The day they told you that you would not be able to serve as a Green Beret anymore, do you remember that day?
I do.
And what was your first thought? What was your first, what was the first thing you thought that you'd be doing, or what was the first you had?
Shock. Complete shock. And, you know, like I said, I got in this position where it was focused on the self in as negative a way as possible. And it was like, you know, what am I supposed to do now? Or how am I going to do anything else? And nobody understands me, and nobody understands, you know, what I've been through. And, What do you mean I can't do this anymore? This was my life's pursuit. I was confident of it. And, you know, it was just, I didn't know how to process that. You know, so even more so, it was heavily medicated and drinking at that time. And that was probably just further exacerbated by that news. But it was just a sinking in self-sorrow and not worried or not even considering, you know, or what are the solutions? What are the possibilities? What could this mean? How could I use this for the benefit of not only myself, for others? You know, it was all just kind of an utter and complete shock and chaos, was the delivering of that, you know. And we were, went to what's called NICO, the National Intrepid Center of Excellence. And that's the leading place for TBI research. And it's done out of Walter Reed. And it was a 4-week inpatient program that I went through there at NICO. And I remember, you know, when I was going through it and they were showing me, you know, different, doing these different psychological, you know, testing. And they showed me a picture of 7 objects. And I had 10 seconds to look at it. And then they took them away and they asked me to draw it, the 7 objects or whatever it was. And I draw the first object, no problem. And I go to find the second object or draw the second object, and I just draw a complete blank. And I was mortified because that was the first time it really got brought to my attention. I was like, my God, this woman just showed me 7 simple shapes. I looked at them for 10 seconds. She pulled it away, and I can't even remember what the second shape was. And I must have looked like somebody had just died in front of me. And we went through that process 2 or 3 more times with the same, you know, the same results. And I just started crying, man, because I thought, my life is over. I can't even remember a second shape, basic shape, to draw it. And it was scary because all you hear, you never analyzed the brain before that, or, you know, you hear a brain injury, like, my God, that's so serious. What, you know, what all does that entail? And then, you know, thinking, man, I don't have any working memory. What's life going to be like? And, it was scary and it was difficult and unnerving and, you know, all at the same time while going through difficulties with, you know, physical pain and, the cognitive deficiencies and then the burden of knowing that I'm heading out on my way out and I think I have a short circuiting brain and having issues with family. It was just, it was a difficult period that took a while to pull out of.
You did, multiple tours in Afghanistan as a Green Beret and, you worked as a breacher with explosives, you know, and tell me about the points leading up to where you knew there was a problem. Like, was it while you were on deployment? What was your job like while you were on deployment? Were you experiencing these things while doing your work? Was it just something you woke up one day and it was there, or was it a gradual thing? How did that come about?
Good question. So we'll kind of start with while I was operating. I never noticed any problems on deployment or on that last deployment. But, you know, I talked to a lot of guys, top level operators, and they might be having a lot of these symptoms, but they're still able to operate at a high level. And that's because they have programmed through years of training this neural network of how to operate in these certain parameters, you know, so CQB or, you know, jumping duties or and these other things are so ingrained through muscle memory and years of training that the operator, the individual, is able to still function at that high level because they're not having to learn new information. They're just applying what they already know, and they can do that even if they're deficient or insufficient in key hormones and are plagued with, you know, total body chronic infection. inflammation or neuroinflammation. And so that's why a lot of people are able to still kind of function as an operator, but their outside skills, maybe their people skills, their ability to learn new things, read for extended periods of time, cognitive abilities, things like that, seem to start to really suffer. And so that's how you can tell, you know, maybe if there's some areas there that you're not really aware of, but they're manifesting as problematic in other areas of your life. And so the operator will say, well, I can still operate, you know what I mean, at a high level. So fuck whatever else you're saying, because I'm still, you know, operating at that level. And that's the reason why people are able to continue to do that job and have these problems, or have had a number of TBIs and suffer elsewhere, but still being able to do that. My job in Special Forces, I was an engineer, and on deployment, you know, that has you working in and around explosives. I was the main breacher for my team. And so, you know, I was the point man. So I usually created all the routes that we were going to use, both infill and exfill, and, you know, primary alternates, stuff like that. And then everything to do with explosives, you know, was my specialty. So dealing with IEDs, whether it was blowing in place or taking apart, you know, examining evidence and then that back up to higher to get more intel, and then, you know, breaching points of denied entry for anywhere we needed to go, in addition to my other operator duties. Those are kind of my specialties there on the team. And so that has you in and around countless explosions over the entirety of career. And we never thought much about it, but we now know that explosive blast wave that's propagated from that explosion, you know, moves out in a 360-degree area and fills up every air-filled organ of the body and essentially rocks that back and forth, you know, causing what would be known as multiple concussions through a single minor explosion. And it might not have any, you know, negative consequences initially, but when you're in that constant state where your brain's continually getting rattled, then it creates this, what Dr. Gordon calls, non-neuropermissive environment. And then the brain can't heal itself. The body can't heal itself. And then we start this this slow process of the all the symptoms that you hear about as a result of traumatic brain injury or post-traumatic stress. And and that's kind of that line of there. I know that answered two of the questions. What was the third part of that question, Chris?
Well, I wanted to, I guess the big thing here is, you know, I wanted to get a lead into to where you started to feel the symptoms.
Okay.
Like where you actually started to feel.
So it wasn't until 3 or 4 months, that I was back from that trip that I started having issues, and it was gradual. First thing was libido, and it's not a minor thing. And that's why I bring it up and I talk about it. I think I was 32 at the time, and, got back and no sexual desire, you know, whatsoever, which was the antithesis of, you know, everything that had been there that constructed myself, prior to that. And so it was difficult because, you know, my wife, we have four kids, we had four kids at the time. We have five kids now. That was difficult for her because, you know, her thought process there is, okay, well, either you don't want me or love me anymore, or there's somebody new, you know, which couldn't be further from the case. And I'm like, for fuck's sake, man. Like, I just get back off a very taxing trip. My body's not working. I just thought like we had taxed ourselves so hard on that last trip that it was going to take some time for my body to come back online. Like, that's all I could figure out. And then, libido went. That caused a lot of strife at home. Next thing was energy. I just was totally depleted. No energy, attention span, you know, started to go. And again, I couldn't, there wasn't anything I could really point to that said, this is, you know, something that's causing these things to happen. But the straw that finally broke the camel's back, outside of the physical pain, the cognitive issues, was the emotional problems that I was now having, that was manifesting. I would get emotional in public, and I had no control over it and no reason why. So starting to cry in public. And again, I didn't know why. I didn't know what was causing it. I certainly didn't want to be that way. Again, I was living what I thought was my life's purpose. I was so happy to do the job that I was doing, to be around the people I was being, living, you know, married to the woman that I wanted to be with. My home life was incredible. I was just like, there's no reason to be depressed. I have no reason to be depressed. I have everything to live for. But now I'm starting to get caught in these constant states of depression, and it manifests as having, you know, a crying attack in public or at home against with my family. And then, you know, not for the first time, you know, kind of being consumed by dark thoughts, where, you know, people would probably classify me as an overly positive person. And, you know, for the first time in my life, I was like this constant battle between good and bad, or, you know, good thinking or not, you know, not supportive thinking. And I became aware of it, and I didn't understand where it was coming from. And that fight to try to, you know, win in your own mind, man, that is exhausting and will rob you and deplete you of everything else. And so, you know, that was going on. And so it was kind of the cultivation of those things, tired of having these, you know, emotional outbursts, that I didn't have any control over. And then I realized, you know what, man, I'm a liability now to the people that I love, and the job that I do. So now it's time to say, hey, I need some help. And, you know, those were kind of the deciding factors that led, you know, to that conclusion. And that was probably over the course of, I don't know, 45, 60 days. And then the first thing, you know, we did was put me on a benzodiazepine and, antidepressant. And then, you know, the cocktails just started to come after that, and things just got worse and worse and worse. But that was the process.
That's crazy. That's absolutely insane. You know, a few things I want to get into here, and there's just so much here that I think that everybody out there needs to be concerned with. And we're going to make this into a series of shorter episodes where we're going to do different parts of this story, because it's just so big. But I want to get into the idea that you never were knocked out, really, except for once. You weren't directly hit with anything. You didn't bear the brunt of a direct explosion. And I want to get into this because there's this idea here that Dr. Gordon's proposed, that you proposed, that TBI and PTSD are connected. And when we're getting into this, you know, for the people at home, you know, Andrew, I've known him for about a year now, and we've been working together for a while, and he is overly positive. He talks positive all the time. I mean, you can't put the guy in a bad mood. And knowing him in this state, not knowing him in the state he was before, I can't imagine that. So Andrew, tell me, how ubiquitous is this? How common is it amongst service members, do you think, in your mind, as far as people who may have suffered a similar bout of brain inflammation?
I don't know to the extent that I was experiencing that. Can you mute that?
Yeah.
There you go. You know, when I was at the breaking point, let's call it, there was other people in the unit that were also at that breaking point, but there's different continuums or, you know, places that lead up to that. And I would, again, this is just, you know, from my experience, but knowing what a life of an operator is like, everybody is working towards, you know, that breaking point, so to speak, when you're in and around explosives on a daily basis, you know, shooting on a daily basis around heavy weapon systems, Carl Gustav's, you know, stuff like that on a daily basis, and then throw in, you know, maybe you're eating well or maybe you're not, so that could be a contributing factor. You're exposed to countless environmental toxins that we know are neurotoxic and also pro-inflammatory. And then your software, right? Your social, your belief system could be, you know, conducive of, you know, a great mindset, or could be contributing also negatively to how you're operating in the world. So when you look at it like that, you know, and then constant deployment cycle, constant op tempo cycle, and the stressors that causes on a home life. Well, we're talking about a potential recipe for disaster if it's not treated appropriately. And for me, it wasn't treated appropriately because there was never any talk about reducing inflammation or checking hormones to make sure these were, you know, an ideal physiological states that would set me up for success to do the things that I wanted to do. So we know that everything that I just talked about leads to what we call the non-neuropermissive environment. And so when you constantly are in that and you can't come back to a balance, or you can't take time off and, you know, refuel and heal yourself, then it's how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll pop? Well, I don't know. For me, it was just under, you know, 9 years doing that on a day-to-day basis in SF. Some guys, it might be, you know, and that's because I played college, a lifetime of playing football all the way through college, you know, that led to that. So, you know, head injuries was nothing new to me, but we never looked at them as anything unless you had a, you know, an object sticking out of your head. It wasn't an issue. And, you know, we now know that's not the case, that they can build up and have a compounding effect over time. And so I can't say with any, you know, empirical evidence or, you know, peer-reviewed articles what those numbers are, but I would say it's, 75% of the people in special operations, at least, probably are deficient in hormones that, as a result of, you know, this neuroinflammation in the brain that causes that dysregulation. And how can you not be when you live that lifestyle? And this is not a complaining or a whining about that lifestyle. What this has been about is coming to new information, coming to new answers, identifying the problem so we can find a solution. And the solution is simple: anti-inflammatory protocol and certain things to make sure your hormones are balanced through an objective lab analysis, and we can keep people in pristine conditions, or we can identify objectively if there is a chink in the armor and work to render it and heal it immediately in real time. And that's just not being done yet. But when you think about, you know, the process, that's, it's only a matter of time. That's what we're working hard to do now, to get these things implemented, where we're putting our service members in the best possible situation that they can be when they're asked to go and do these very difficult jobs. We want to give them every means that they can to not only do the job, but to perform and be a husband and a family, you know, man or woman when they're back home with their families. And that's, you know, one of the main central, you know, issues or things that gives my life purpose and meaning now, is to get this information out to the people who it can really affect. Because I think that, you know, from 16, 17 years of war now, so many lessons learned and paid for in blood, we can apply these lessons learned to put out a better product. And this is one area I see that we can easily implement and improve our performance and our quality of life.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we think of the different types of jobs that exist in the military right now, and particularly the ones that have been big over the last decade, you know, people manning 50 caliber machine guns, the types of shaking that could go on, you know, doing that, being exposed to that type of fire, as well as being exposed to, you know, constant rattling, constant explosions and things like that. This could definitely be a very ubiquitous thing. When you came to Dr. Gordon and you explained your symptoms, what was in your head at the time? Did you think that you were just undergoing post-traumatic stress? Did you think that there was a TBI related issue when you'd approached him or when he approached you? Did you know the entirety of what was going on then, or how much did he explain to you at that point?
Well, I had been and was diagnosed with having post-traumatic stress, but I never bought that, and it bothered me. It bothered me not because I thought anything less about it. It bothered me because I wasn't having difficulties getting over, you know, anything. I wanted to go back and do the job I thought I was, you know, meant to do. You know, that's what it was all about. I didn't have any problems doing the difficult job I was asked to do. I took great pride in doing that because I believed in it, and I believed in the men to the left and to the right of me and my role in bringing them back to their loved ones. And so, you know, that really compelled me to probably go out and probably, you know, I mean, everybody to go out and do things that were that would be looked at by most of society as, you know, crazy or a suicide mission or something like that. But when you kind of live by that code, you know, you're willing to take these risks to do things. And I was just like, I don't have any problems with the jobs that we've done. It's not causing me, you know, I'm not losing sleep over it. I'm not necessarily having, you know, nightmares. You know, we definitely had, you know, things go south and thing, you know, when you're in the game that long, man, you know, you're going to have experience loss and tragedy and suffering, but that's the story of life. So I just didn't buy into this post-traumatic stress disorder because I wasn't pointing to anything that was, you know, holding me up. And that definitely does happen, and it's a real thing. Dr. Gordon, you know, thinks it's, from his perspective, if I understand it right, that it's purely a hardware issue, and the post-traumatic stress manifests as, you know, crossed wires or, you know, parts of the brain not being able to talk to each other, or the electrical signal being too strong or too weak. And that manifests in different ways as post-traumatic stress. While I definitely think that the research has shown that that's absolutely true, there is also a software, you know, portion of that, and that's wrapped up in, you know, the stories that we tell ourselves. And so if people continue to relive a negative event or a physical trauma or, you know, something that was very malevolent that they were a part in at some level, then every time they relive that by thought, they're producing that physiological, that biological, that neurochemical response in their body. And the body, the internal structure of the body can't tell the difference between happening now and is this a memory? So it makes the chemistry to reflect that level of mind. And so when you grasp that, you realize that post-traumatic stress, is totally self-induced by thinking and reliving certain situations over and over and over again. And if you're doing that 100, 200 times a day, and that's turning on that chemistry that affects you in a negative way, that puts you in a fight or flight mechanism, well, now that's opening you up, and that's weakening your immune system, and it's opening you up to sickness and disease. And that is definitely a real thing that can be brought on independently of any hardware issues, any issues with neuroinflammation or downregulation or dysregulation of hormones, both produced in the brain and or body. So, you know, I wasn't aware of any of this when things were happening to me. All I knew, all I thought, Chris, was, man, I have got some screws loose now. Because I said before, my thoughts and my actions for the first time aren't in alignment, you know, and I can think of a time when we were at, it was my wife was taking me to the airport and we had our three youngest children in the car, two in car seats, and she's breastfeeding another one. I went in to get our youngest daughter some food from a fast food place. And I got into an altercation in the parking lot with essentially a teenager. And, you know, ended up dropping him in the parking lot and throwing him into oncoming traffic. And then the people there at the establishment, you know, took didn't agree with that. And rightly so. But, you know, then they challenged me and I end up dropping, you know, a number of people in this parking lot. And I, you know, had to do evasive maneuvers to get out of there. And, you know, as I dropped the last dude going to my car, I see my wife and my children looking at me in horror, and I'm just thinking, my God, what has happened? What is going on? And that was the first time it really resonated with me. Like, hey, not only am I at risk, my health is at risk, but everybody that I come in contact with is now at risk because I'm unable to handle these situations accordingly. 'Cause there was just no means or no reason to turn to what happened, what transpired. But that's where it went, you know? And so I just thought, man, I have screws loose and I don't know what's going on. They tell me I've had a number of head injuries and I'm never going to be the same. And I just refused to accept that. So we just kept looking. And then, meeting Dr. Gordon, hearing his podcast with Joe Rogan and Matt Gosney, and where he dissected, you know, Matt was on 17 or 18 medications and, you know, a number of TBIs. He had was shot in a bad explosion, and talking about, you know, each of the things that Matt was having problems with, how it directly related to neuroinflammation and the specific hormones that were deficient or insufficient for Matt. And when they corrected those, all his problems went away. He was able to come off all his medication. And Dr. Gordon was able to kind of show me again through my lab analysis, you know, why I was going through the things I was going through, what that was related with as far as damage to certain portions or parts of the brain, and the deficiency of certain hormones, how that directly relates to, you know, this area or cognition or proper social behavior or sequential behavior, you know, all these other areas. So it was just like an education, drinking from a fire hose, but it was so awesome because everything was rooted in scientific evidence in a way that I could understand. And more importantly, a way to fix it, you know, a solution based on my individual needs and not through, you know, medication, but putting back in the body what the body needs, what it's not making on its own. And then, you know, let's see what happened. And seeing what happened was giving me my life back and almost, you know, in a rapid succession.
Awesome. We're gonna stop there for today's session. What I want you guys at home to think about is how much of what you've been told has had an impact on your belief system, and how has your belief system limited you? And we'll be back next week, and we're going to talk more with Andrew about the impact on his family. We're going to talk a bit more about the medications that the establishment was giving him and the impact of those medications. And we're going to be talking more about these potential solutions. I want to thank you for listening to this first installment of Tales from the Blast Factory. And wherever you are, whatever you're doing, get out there and live your best life.
If you guys like our content here on the Warrior Soul podcast, if you enjoy our episodes, or even if you don't, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. We're trying to do everything we can to produce the best show for you that we can. And we really do need your feedback to know exactly what you want from us, whether or not we're doing our jobs. So whether it's a 1-star or a 5-star review, please let us know how we're doing. And it really helps the show out, helps us to produce better quality content for you. And we want to hear what you want us to cover. So if you guys can do that for us, we will be eternally grateful to you, and we'll produce better stuff.